Welcome to the World Bank EdTech Podcast. Opportunities to read and learn at home are critical to improving children's learning outcomes, but too many young children are growing up without books and opportunities to read at home. Expanding opportunities to read at home is essential during this crisis, but it's a smart investment at any time. Today, World Bank EdTech team member Maria Barone speaks with World Bank Read at Home team members Penelope Bender and Jennifer Albone about the importance of children having access to physical books and learning materials and how this complements remote learning and EdTech approaches which are being rolled out by governments. In particular, they speak about how Read at Home is deploying technology to test and scale track and trace systems to enable efficient book procurement, and how Read at Home is contributing to open source digital libraries to ensure suitable books are available in languages children understand.
Welcome to this edition of the World Bank EdTech Podcast. I'm happy to moderate this session. I'm Maria Barone, core member of the EdTech team. Today, we're focusing on Read at Home, one of the main components of the Continuous and Accelerated Learning World Bank program to respond to COVID-19 and improve learning. The Read at Home team has developed a great set of resources to help countries select storybooks, engage parents to read with children at home, and use innovative approaches to deliver and procure books. Expanding opportunities to read at home is essential during this crisis, but is in fact a smart investment at any time. To tell us more about this program, we are delighted to have with us Jenny Albone and Penelope Bender, members of the Read at Home team. Over to you, Jenny. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, Maria. I'm delighted to be part of this conversation this afternoon. I'm Jenny Albone. I'm a consultant at the World Bank's Global Education Practice and a member of the Read at Home team.
Over to Penelope.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. I'm Penelope Bender. I'm also a consultant at the World Bank, part of the Global Read at Home team, and really happy to be here on the podcast today.
Thank you both. Let's start with the basics. Some of our listeners may not be familiar with the program, so it would be great if we can start with explaining a little bit about what is Read at Home and what are some of their main goals.
Of course, I'll start. So Read at Home is a program led by the World Bank to ensure more children get the benefits of reading from an early age. And it aims to get reading and learning materials into homes and communities quickly and efficiently, targeting hard-to-reach families of children from the early grades through to age 12. Read at Home works with countries and provides technical assistance to develop, procure, and distribute quality reading materials in languages that children know and speak at home. It also works to improve the quality and efficiency of the book chain across countries and lower the unit costs of books. It launched in 2020, and since then, Read at Home's been working in 15 countries so far. Each country's taken quite a different approach to reaching families and communities. So in North Macedonia, for example, it supported the Ministry of Education and Ministry of Social Protection to reach all children ages 3 to 12 in the country's poorest households. So that's about 40,000 children, with storybooks, reading comprehension activities, and guidance for parents. In Senegal, it's working with the Ministry of Education to reach between 1 and 2 million children under the age of 6 by partnering with community and public preschools, Quranic schools, nutrition platforms, and mothers groups. And then in Ethiopia, Read at Home is working with Ethiopia Reads, who are a national NGO to reach families in conflict-affected regions with 45,000 books in 3 local languages. And as well as all of that direct work with countries, Read at Home's created global public goods to support efforts to get books into children's hands, which include guidance on how to identify reading materials, engage with caregivers, monitor and evaluate efforts, and critically provide guidance on procurement.
So Jenny covered almost all of the activities that we're doing at Read at Home. I just wanted to underline again why this is so important. There are really 2 core reasons. The first one is that for children to learn to read, they need to have both reading instruction and time for reading practice. And we know that in many of the countries we work with, Children do not have ample time for instruction at school, and they often don't have access to materials for practice at home or at school. So Read at Home is addressing that through providing materials for students to take home to use to practice the reading skills that they've learned at school. The second reason is that it's very important for children to learn to like to read. Motivation around reading is an important part of becoming a good reader. You want children to see a book and to want to read the book, to be excited about reading the book, to be happy about reading the book. And so Read at Home is developing storybooks that have interesting content for children that are written in languages that children know, so that we can really get children excited about the process of learning to read and practicing their reading.
Thanks a lot, Penelope and Jenny, for providing a great overview of the program and on the tailored approach that you have on each of the countries responding to the specific needs each of them have and to the main problems that the program is aiming to address. I had a follow-up question, and Penelope, you've started to build upon this. Why do you think access to physical books and learning materials matter so much during the pandemic and beyond?
So the main reason, well, there's several reasons, but the main reason why they matter so much is that so many children and families we work with simply have no access to digital materials, whether it's because of connectivity issues or electricity issues or something else. They simply don't have access. I recently looked at something from UNESCO, which estimated that 500 million children worldwide have no access to remote learning opportunities. And that was out of the about 1 billion children who have been out of school due to COVID. So about 50% of those children have no access to remote learning. The other reason is that young children need physical books in order to experience what it's like to read a book. It's very difficult for young children to read small font if you're trying to use a mobile phone or something like that. They need to see large enough letters, large enough words. They need to be able to see color. They need to have the experience of turning the page to learn things that we call concepts of print, which are things like, what's the front of a book? What's the back of a book? What are the pictures for? How do you read text from left to right or right to left? All of those kinds of things really only happen with physical books. And just to add one other thing around the issue of children reading on devices, even where there's electricity and connectivity, it's pretty rare still for young children to have access to digital devices. So again, we're really focused on improving the availability of reading materials for the most marginalized children, the most remote families, to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to read, even during the pandemic.
And to build on what Penelope set out, is that really broadly, we know that having books at home matters because literacy skills are linked to children's experience with language and the printed word, starting right from birth. And we know that the frequency and quality of interactions children have at home in their early years is really strongly associated with their language and cognitive development, their readiness to start school, and their academic performance. And so even before children start school, the interactions they have with adults, like singing songs, telling stories, and asking questions, all are the building blocks for language development. And then after children's early years, children still need support and encouragement to practice reading. And as Penelope said, to learn to like reading so that they can move from learning to read to reading to learn and gain enjoyment from what they're reading. And reading is a skill that requires a lot of practice. And practically, that means reading a lot of books and a lot of things. And children who have access to books at home are simply at an advantage compared to the peers who don't. So it's been estimated that children who are read to multiple times a day until they're 5 years old hear 1.4 million words, you know, around about, than children who were never read to. Another study from across 27 countries found that children growing up in homes with many books get, on average, 3 years more schooling than children from bookless homes. And that was regardless of their parents' education, their occupation, or their class. So all reading matters. And as Penelope said, there is a distinct advantage, especially for the hardest to reach families, to having access to books that are in print.
If I could just add one thing, I do want to say that All of the titles that we're developing for Read at Home will be available in digital format as well. So for children and families who have access to digital, for ministries of education and other development partners who have access to digital and can spread the use of the materials, they will be available in both formats.
Penelope, that's great. I was actually going to follow up with a question on that specific topic, thinking about how many countries have deployed multi-channel strategies during the pandemic, including printed resources, but also digital resources. And as you mentioned, in a way to ensure that most students can access to either one or more modalities of learning during the pandemic. So in this regard, how would you think Read at Home could enhance a multi-channel strategy of remote or hybrid learning? We are in the second year of the pandemic, and still many countries have not gone back to completely in-person learning. And as you correctly mentioned, Read at Home is useful even when students return to in-person learning. It allows to have an environment conducive towards literacy and to the love of books.
Yes, so students spend much more time at home than they do at school. And so it's very important that they have access to reading and learning materials outside of school. But these materials can also be used in school. So one other area that we've been working on in Read at Home is around copyright and licensing for books. So all of the Read at Home materials will be licensed through Creative Commons, which means that they will be an open educational resource. And so that means that anyone can have access to the books. We will upload the digital formats onto a platform called the Global Digital Library. And so anyone can go on to the Global Digital Library, use those books on a mobile device, or download and print them on a small scale if they want to print them locally. We are also developing print versions so that they can be printed at scale. For example, in Senegal, we'll be printing millions of copies, and that will be done through a print version of those books. So we're using languages that children know, we're creating multiple titles, and we're making those titles accessible as an open educational resource so that they can be used in a variety of formats.
Thanks a lot, Penelope, for that information. I think that's great to make the information available in a variety of formats. Will allow even more people to access to that. And just going back to all of the evidence that Jenny has mentioned, and I think this points out to something that we can delve a little bit deeper, and that I think she has written a blog. Why is Read at Home also relevant beyond the pandemic? Is it relevant also for other goals, such as addressing learning poverty?
Definitely. Unfortunately, we know that many families in low and middle income countries just don't have access to storybooks that are age appropriate, engaging, or written in languages that children understand. So in sub-Saharan Africa, for example, just 3% of households have more than two children's books at home. And while investments are being made to improve the availability of books worldwide, many of those efforts focus on increasing book quantity and quality, usually in primary schools and usually for textbooks. And it's really important, as we've set out, that children have opportunities to read, read often, and have a wide choice of reading materials to become fluent readers. And storybooks can help children to read about diverse topics, build cultural knowledge, find role models, and learn new ideas. And the COVID-19 pandemic has highlighted a number of things. To your point about learning poverty, Maria, before the pandemic, it was estimated globally on average that 53% of children at age 10 were unable to read a simple text. And by that, I don't mean Harry Potter, unfortunately. I mean very, very basic reading material. And that figure is an average, so it masks huge regional variations. And it's also made worse, likely, by the impact of school closures and the pandemic. It's also, I think, highlighted just how important the home learning environment is and exposed quite significant learning inequalities about who can learn and where they can learn. And those inequalities disproportionately impact poor countries as well as poor communities within countries. And we know that while some countries have been able to organise remote instruction, not all families have been able to access learning materials or support children's learning in the home. And so having books in at home is a first step to supporting learning, especially in the most marginalised communities. And as we've set out, Read at Home isn't just a crisis response. And so building forward from the pandemic, the programme can complement what children learn at school, provide continuity of learning between home and school, and can help to build the will to read alongside the skill to read.
Thanks a lot, Jenny. Now that we have established the main objectives of Read at Home, the evidence behind it, the importance of the program going forward and even beyond the pandemic, focusing the conversation back to the main topic of this podcast, which is education technology. How is Read at Home using technology?
So Read at Home is using technology in a number of ways. When we talk about book provision, we talk about the book supply chain. And the book supply chain starts with planning and forecasting. So the first thing we do is we use technology to determine how many books will be needed in a country, which is based on a number of factors, data that comes from EMIS and other systems around enrollment, around loss, around the durability of a book, the projected lifetime of a book. So there are a lot of ways to use technology for planning and forecasting. The next thing that we do is that we use technology to develop titles in languages children know. So there's one open source software that was developed by USAID through the All Children Reading Grand Challenge, which is called Bloom. And Bloom is open source software that helps authors in countries write books for children in languages children know. There are also a large number of open source illustrations that are available through databases that are then used through that software in order to produce these titles. We then use technology to make those titles accessible across projects, across countries, and across regions. So the Global Digital Library is a digital platform where thousands of titles in hundreds of languages are stored, and titles can be uploaded and they can be downloaded for people to use on digital devices or to print in a small scale way. We're also working with the Global Book Alliance and the GDL to develop print-ready versions of those files, which will be available also to download for large-scale commercial printing. After books are printed, of course, there's technology that's used to manage the packing and the delivery through sea freight or air freight. But then through distribution in the countries, we are further developing a kind of distribution monitoring software, which has often been called track and trace. I would say in the education sector, people know it by track and trace or TNT. So TNT allows countries to monitor book distribution from their point of arrival in the country, or really from their point of production, wherever that may be, all the way to the final destination, whether that's the region or the school or the child. It allows real-time visibility into where the books are and how quickly they're making it to their destination. And it allows the ministry, the distributors, other people involved to continue to monitor that distribution through the whole chain. Those are some of the major ways that we're using technology. There are so many ways we can use technology to make the book supply chain more efficient and more cost-effective.
Penelope's point about books being affordable is incredibly important, and it's an area where Read at Home is deploying a range of technologies to improve the cost-effectiveness, the quality, and the efficiency of book supply chains in countries. It's important that books are affordable, both for education systems and families, and we see that the cost to procure and deliver books varies substantially between countries. To give you an example, in two African countries located very near to each other, in one country, the unit cost of a basic book is $7, but in the other, buying the same book to the same specification would cost $1 per unit. And a huge factor in that variation is the quality of procurement processes. And after books are purchased, books need to arrive at their intended destination. And every country is different, and there are a number of different bottlenecks and challenges that affect whether books get to you, where they're supposed to be going. Sometimes ministries don't have the data to make decisions about the number of books they need to purchase. The data that they have might be out of date. The systems that they have can be prone to errors. Sometimes on their way to schools, books are dropped off at addresses where it's quite hard to arrange transport to get them to their final stop. And that can impact on if and when books can be used in that school year. And other times, there's just little attention paid to tracking books at each stage of their journey. So issues or breakdowns in the supply chain might not be visible. So to respond to those challenges, Read at Home is trialling track and trace, as Penelope outlines. Read at Home is also developing guidance on procurement procedures, standardised technical specifications to assist in book procurement, developing solutions to help reduce costs and timelines, and building on work by a host of partners to develop prototypes for cost-effective systems. And what we're seeing so far is incredibly promising. So to give you an example, in the RMI, where we're working to distribute books to about 1,000 families of children under the age of 5. And through trialling different approaches to procurement, we've been able to lower the cost of books from a range of about $9 to $19 a book to just under $2 a unit. Additionally, we've been using a multi-channel strategy as part of Read at Home. So as well as distributing books and printed reading materials, we're also using local radio to broadcast messages.
So I just wanted to add that of the $2 cost per book, a large part of that cost is shipping, because it's quite hard to get books to the Marshall Islands. In countries that are closer to major printers, we do expect the price of storybooks to be between 25 cents and 50 cents a copy, making them much more affordable than the $2 to $3 to $5 costs we commonly see, particularly in Africa at the moment.
It is great to hear, Jenny and Penelope, all of the ways that you are using technology to enhance procurement, distribution of books, and to make sure that books are available in different languages to accelerate the distribution. But thinking about the enabling ecosystem for this program to succeed, what can you tell us about how to support parents and caregivers to implement Read at Home?
So just as it's very important to work with teachers and other school personnel to make sure that books are used in classrooms and to support teachers in their use of books in classrooms, it's also very important to work with parents and caregivers to help them engage with their children around books. In many households, they've never had access to books before. Reading is not necessarily something that's done with very young children. There's a whole range of family practices that exist in different environments. And so Read at Home is providing a lot of support and resources to develop culturally appropriate, contextualized programs for parent engagement, caregiver engagement in appropriate languages. So there will be a caregiver toolkit. There are ideas for using multiple channels. We talked a little bit about radio. We're also looking at using SMS and IVR, interactive voice. Television has also been used in several countries to communicate with parents and caregivers. Small videos to demonstrate how to read with your child that can be sent out over the phone network. We're looking at a whole range of options. And then, of course, things on paper like posters and leaflets and handouts, to provide the information that parents and caregivers, and in some cases, community facilitators need in order to work effectively with their children. So in doing this, we're collaborating with partners. UNICEF is working with us in Niger. We have WITME in the RMI, Tostan in Senegal, working on titles in particular, but also talking with us about caregiver engagement and other partners in other contexts, to make sure we develop really appropriate, effective programs to help parents and caregivers read with their children.
Caregiver engagement is a really important part of Read at Home. Read at Home, the program and the approach was partly inspired by existing book distribution programs. When you think of book distribution, it's very easy to see an image of simply printing books and getting them somewhere. And as Penelope's sketched out, it's really important that parents and caregivers and communities and adults that are involved in children's lives are engaged with reading materials and can enjoy them, because that maximizes the chance that they'll be used and that reading will be an enjoyable experience. One of those models for book distribution that has been a kind of source inspiration for Read at Home is the Bookstart program in the UK that's run by an organization called Book Trust. And what Bookstart does is get books to parents within their child's first year, along with guidance about how to enjoy reading with their child from birth. And that's delivered through a trusted adult, like a librarian, a health visitor, a registrar. And they give the books to children accompanied by positive, empowering messages about reading, so that caregivers and parents, no matter where they are in their own literacy skills, can enjoy the gift, but also enjoy reading with their children.
Thank you, Penelope and Jenny. You have described a super important point on engaging caregivers and parents and provided very good examples. We'll be on the lookout for what emerging lessons we get from country implementation. I think is going to be fascinating, especially when thinking about scalability and how can other countries approach the same question on distributing books in a program such as Read at Home, and also enhancing and incentivizing teachers when using in-person education as well, parents, caregivers, and students to read at home. And I think that's an amazing feature that is also highlighted in the Read at Home manual. Can you tell us about the resources that Read at Home has prepared that maybe policymakers and researchers can access to?
Yes. So through Read at Home, we want the experience of reading with children to be exciting and fun and joyful and simple. But the reality of selecting and distributing high quality books in languages that children understand is anything but simple. And so to cut through some of that complexity, we have produced a suite of global public goods to help teams, policymakers, and NGOs walk through that process at the various steps. To support efforts to get books into children's hands includes guidance on how to identify reading materials, engage with caregivers, monitor and evaluate efforts, and guidance on procurement. One of those goods is the Materials Guidance Manual, which provides a really comprehensive overview of some of the many decisions and considerations when you're selecting, developing, and distributing reading materials to children and families. That includes things like a summary of some of the research underpinning reading to inform and guide those decisions. It includes suggestions on what a quality storybook is and how that differs at different points in a child's reading journey. And it includes tools to monitor and evaluate efforts, whether that's through running surveys with households, and includes ideas for distributing books so that they don't just get to their final destination, but they have the best chance of being used and enjoyed.
So in addition to the manual, we're developing a range of other documents that build out on particular topics that we think will be helpful to World Bank teams and also to client teams. So the first one is a document that's guidance for using World Bank bidding documents. I know that this is not super exciting for lots of people, but procurement is really important. Conducting efficient, transparent procurement is incredibly important for lowering the cost of books and for making sure that children get the books they need when they need them. So World Bank procurement can be complicated. So we have taken the bidding documents, which are standard, and annotated them to help everyone use them correctly and to understand what to put in all of the sections where you have to add particular input. We're also producing guidance on producing reading books. So what does a good reading book look like? What kinds of fonts do you need to use for beginning readers? How big should the books be? Book binding, other issues around the production. And then we have a nice note on success factors that led to Mozambique having really cost-effective procurement. So it's 10 tips from a country case study from the case of Mozambique that lays out their major factors in making their procurement the lowest cost procurement in the world for a bank project. Then in addition, we have some other more technical things. We're developing standard technical specifications, which describe the kind of paper that should be used, the kind of binding that should be used, other technical aspects of a book. And we'll have 14 sets of those. So every kind of book you could possibly imagine needing, from a library book to a textbook to a children's book to take home. There will be standard technical specifications that you can add to your procurement. We are coming out with a guide for authors and illustrators for writing children's books, a guidance on copyright and negotiating print and digital rights for teams that are buying copyrighted books. And then a couple of super technical things, which are about Incoterms, which is the way you get your books from the country that produced them to the country where you're using them, and the kinds of insurance that you need to make sure that your books are appropriately insured. If the ship holding the books goes down in the harbor before it arrives where it needs to arrive, you need to make sure that you have enough insurance. So all of these will be really useful to teams that are working on procurement, doing the nitty-gritty of procurement to make sure that you get books at the lowest cost possible. And to help everyone use these materials and put them into action, we're also providing technical assistance for country teams to help them through the procurement process.
We'll make sure to include links to some of those resources in the podcast description so our listeners can download them. Since we are discussing how relevant it is to get books into the hands of students and parents, it'd be great if you can share with us, Penelope and Jenny, a book that you have read recently that has stayed in your mind for days or perhaps even weeks, as most great books do. Maybe we start with Jenny.
It's such a good question, Maria. So I recently read a book called The High House, which is by Jessie Greengrass. It is a fantastic novel, though I have to say that reading it felt more like nonfiction. The book is about a group of people who seek refuge in their holiday home as really heavy rain starts to turn to long-term floods, and they try and escape the rising tides in this house with tragic consequences. And it's just stayed with me because while I was reading it, I could see torrential rain pouring from the window. And it's just, we all know that we are living in a world where climate events are becoming more frequent and more dramatic and having extremely impactful consequences. And so to read this beautifully written and haunting book felt very, very close to home. And it has stayed with me for good reasons, but also for the reasons that I've mentioned.
That's great to hear, Jenny. I'll make sure to put that on my reading list. Sounds really good. How about you, Penelope?
So I love that question too. And of course, I love reading. I thought I would talk about two books that I've read very recently. One of them I'm still reading. It's called Invisible Child, Poverty, Survival, and Hope in an American City. And I actually read quite a bit of it last year because it was printed in different formats. And this is a book about a family, a homeless family in New York City. And it's in particular the story of one of the girls in the family and her journey from childhood through adolescence. And what I really love about this book is the way it talks not only about the challenges that the family is facing as they navigate the social welfare system in the United States and all the barriers and challenges to accessing the services they need, but it also talks a lot about the strengths of the family and the strengths they bring with them and how they're able to navigate using those strengths that they have. The other book that I recently read that is one of my all-time favorites is a children's book. I do a lot of work with foster children in Virginia, and so I'm lucky enough to have a two-year-old in my life at the moment. And her favorite book is called Chicka Chicka Boom Boom. And it goes, A told B and B told C, I'll meet you at the top of the coconut tree. And the first time I met this child, when I told her the first lines of the book, she smiled and she jumped up and down and she started looking at the print and putting her finger on the letters. And so already at that early age, you could see how excited she was about reading, how excited she was about language. So that's another one of my favorites. And it just shows again what children bring, what families can bring, and what we have to build on when we work with children in the range of countries we work in.
I love that, Penelope. That second book especially sounds super, super fun. I'll make sure to read it as well and to recommend it to my nephews and to all of the children I have in my family as well.
Maria, what book are you currently reading, or what book have you read recently that stayed with you? We've shared ours.
I have read a lot of books during lockdown. I think reading is a very good way to find solace, especially in these times. But just thinking maybe of the latest book I've read that stayed with me because of circumstances, I got as a gift a book about Monet and his friendship with Clemenceau, so the prime minister of France when they were in the First World War. It's called Mad Enchantment, and it focuses on the last 12 years of Monet's life and the process of him painting the water lilies that are at the Museum of Orangery in France. And also, I think some of them are in New York. But it tells you the story on how he painted those, even amidst the sound of bullets flying around near his home in the outskirts of Paris, and him painting through cataracts. And that book stayed with me because I was thinking in the same way a lot of professionals, a lot of our work, read at home, education technology, remote learning. We are also working in the middle of a crisis, and we are pushing through many of these efforts, even in the middle of probably the first largest pandemic after the Spanish flu. So that's why it stayed with me.
What you've described about seeking solace in other narratives about adversity. We've been talking about Read at Home and how you get books to children, but I think the why and actually the impact that a great book can have on the way that you both see the world and the way that you approach dealing with the world and everything that it can throw at you, it can't be underestimated. And like you, during the pandemic, returning to familiar books and finding new books has been such a source of energy and inspiration, because I think the best authors, whether they're writing really catchy lyrics in very simple rhymes or more complex texts, are able to let us access and understand and process those things and come to a different understanding of what we said. So I have quite a long reading list at the moment, but I would love to add the book that you've just mentioned to it.
That's great. We've given a variety of books for audience to add to the reading list. And perhaps that's one of the takeaways from this podcast. As Jenny was saying, books are a good source of solace, especially in times of adversity. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. And thanks to Jenny and Penelope for sharing useful insights with us.